From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. I'm Megan Mack, alongside host Evan Dawson. Let's open the podcast with a look at police body cameras. They're coming to the Rochester Police Department in July.
And this has been a controversial topic across the country, of course. One of the most significant questions is when the cameras will be turned on and when police will be allowed to turn them off. After all, if there's a tense situation between an officer and a civilian, you might wonder whether that officer should be allowed to turn the camera off.
Here's Rochester Police Chief Michael Simonelli explaining why the body cameras will not be turned on all the time.
I do want to point out our policy is very broad, that to some limited exceptions, which I can go into, the camera should be on under our policy recording the event. Now, having said that, there are going to be limited times when we may turn them off. We have people that may be afraid to come forward and provide information on serious crimes if they're being recorded. We have confidential informants. We also have to take some sensitivities into account. For example, if we get a call, the example I use is in a locker room, say at the Genesee Valley Park pool, and someone stole a wallet out of a locker. There's going to be people in there in various states of dress and undress. And to walk in with a video camera for these people that are in the locker room is not, you know, I mean, as a matter of decency, we don't see the need to record that. However, in that situation, under our policy, if the officer was taking any enforcement action, detaining, arresting, using force, he'd be required to have it on. So we're trying to make these balances, to try to maximize the things we record, but not have an adverse impact on how we do business. Another concern which people raise is, what if I don't want to be recorded? So if you've looked at the policy, you see that there are certain situations where the person may say, I just don't want to be recorded. They could be a victim. They could be a witness. It could just be a matter of personal privacy. In those cases, the officer is being instructed to record the request, and then the officer will have the discretion to turn it off. Again, unless the officer is taking some type of action, arrest, detention, use of force, he's going to be required to turn it back on. So I understand the council members' concerns. I think, though, as time goes on, that, you know, to have a camera going, you know, for hours as an officer is driving, you know, capturing the steering wheel, maybe the hands of the officer driving, it just is of no value.
Chief Simonelli says that video needed in disputes and court cases will be preserved for at least 6 months before it's deleted. One place police spend a lot of time is responding to calls near zombie properties, abandoned houses that become magnets for drugs and crime.
New Monroe County Clerk Adam Bellow has put together a task force to reduce the number of zombie properties. Some listeners wondered why we can't just speed up the time required for foreclosure, but Bellow said not all foreclosure properties are the same.
There's probably 24 reasons why a house can become vacant, can be considered a zombie home. And so part of what we're putting together is essentially this flowchart of that would go through different circumstances. You know, some houses fall vacant because of a death. If you live in my hometown in Irondequoit, there's a very famous house on the corner of Titus and Brookview that was the bane of, I think, everyone's existence for a number of months. It's finally for sale. But, you know, that one became vacant because the homeowner had died and the estate didn't handle the transfer of the house. There's folks who simply took out more than they can chew and walked away from the house. And other times there could be a lost income. And now it could be through no fault of the homeowner. There could be a medical issue, something like that. Or again, they can lose their job, some sort of lost income. And so there's all these different reasons why they're vacant. And so part of what we're looking to do is put together the action plan for each one of those reasons. I mean, because for each reason why a house became vacant, it is sitting there, there's a different solution to tackle that problem.
Bellow said the new task force should have recommendations on how to deal with zombie properties by the fall.
Now to a story that sparked a great deal of listener feedback. There's an organization called Great Schools for All, and its goal is to improve educational options for all kids in the Rochester area. They're proposing a series of new magnet schools, some in the city, some not. These schools would be voluntary for parents to send their kids, meaning if you live in Pittsford, you could choose to send your child to one of these magnet schools in Rochester.
50% of the students in these new schools would be from low-income families, 50% from upper or middle income. And here's the moment that caught so much attention. Mark Hare of Great Schools for All says there is a generational change in how parents view city schools.
We've talked to a number of young parents who, faced with that choice, should I stay living in the Park Avenue neighborhood where I like to live in the city, or should I move to Brighton when I have kids? A lot of them are still making the same choice that parents made 20 years ago. They moved to Brighton. They don't feel they can find a good school in the city. The difference is they don't like that choice.
This is important. We're not saying it's not happening the way
right.
it used to.
No, no. Right. It happens. But the difference is they don't like that choice. They don't think that's good enough. They don't fault Brighton schools or Pittsford schools. That's not my point. But unlike parents from previous generations which moved to the suburbs and said, well, we got what we need now. That's good enough. These parents are saying it's better than a safe than a school that we're not confident in the city. But what we want is a diverse school, and we're not getting it.
Paula in Pittsford. Go ahead, Paula.
Hi. I wish you guys had come up with a magnet school about 1988 when I moved to Pittsburgh. We were looking for a house with two young kids and assumed that the best place was the place with the best results. And my kids spent both of their school careers going all the way through Pittsburgh schools, and I wish that they'd had an opportunity to go to school with kids of a different socioeconomic profile than they had. My son spent 2 years at BOCES in Pittsford as part, or in, excuse me, in Parenton as part of the auto mechanics program, and those were the best 2 years of his school life. So I just want to tell you guys, go for it. I think it's a wonderful idea.
You can learn more about this organization at their website, GS4A, that's the number four, GS4A.org.
This week, we sat down with a group of veterans who all help out with Honor Flight. That's the organization that flies veterans to Washington, D.C. to visit the memorial for the war in which they served.
In this clip, you're going to hear from Private First Class George Haynes, who served in World War II. He told us that for decades, he could not bring himself to talk about the atrocities he witnessed. That changed on Honor Flight. And that led to this exchange among the panelists, starting with George.
I don't want to bring it up in my mind again. What I saw, I've told now, and it's out. Forget it. That's what went on in my mind for years. I didn't want to remember it, visualize it.
Sure. And that this is where I think, you know, some family members might not ask because they are sensitive to that they don't want to put you in the frame of mind to make you sort of relive and confront those things. But George, for you, do you agree with John that generally you don't feel like family should be probing, asking?
I didn't want to bring it up and remember it myself.
Yeah.
And if I tell somebody about it, then I was going to bring it back in my mind, which I didn't want it to happen. I'd seen it and forget it. It was that bad.
We have more fun, George and I, volunteering.
He wants to be active.
But you see, Evan, I think that's what we're talking about. This group, these folks, they served and they're happier volunteering. They just want to keep giving back to the community.
Yeah, but I think, Peter, you know, I think as someone who I have not served in the military, so I don't have a full understanding that you know, certainly there's a brother and sisterhood within the military that you can't have unless you have served. And that's not to say it's intentionally exclusionary. It's just like anything else. If you haven't done it, it's hard to understand it. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm trying to, you know, kind of explore is should we be asking more? Should we be asking mom and dad and grandparents and family members? And it's an interesting answer I'm hearing from them, which is that you should respect and honor, but there are times where it's hard to kind of mine that territory. How do you feel about that, Peter?
Well, my personal view and my experience with veterans from all the periods is it's a personal issue.
Yeah.
I do think that the stories should be told. Freedom is not free, as these gentlemen know. It's always one generation away from being lost. And we always need to have men and women willing to stand up for the values of our community and our country. So people should know what that really means and what's entailed by that. But at the same time, I think what you'll hear from a lot of veterans is they just did their job. That's why it's personal.
When people come up to us when they see our hats and so forth and say, thank you for serving, that's all we want to hear.
Okay.
And I do the same thing. When I see another veteran and I go up to them and I say, thank you for your service. And that kind of fills our heart when that happens. And it in both giving and saying that to another veteran and a stranger coming up to me and saying, thank you for your service. And that's all we want.
Those two words, thank you, they mean a lot.
Turning to politics, the Libertarian Party sees the presidential election as a big opening. They see the poll numbers for Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and they see a chance to bring new people into their party.
We talked with local Libertarian organizers Phil Rickey and Drew Beeman. They explained why they think Libertarian Party presidential candidate Gary Johnson has a chance to do really well. Starts with the fact that he was a two-term governor with a popular record. And they see an electorate that is actually ready for a third-party challenge.
This election cycle is not like anything we've ever done before. You can take what has always been and try to apply it to this, but these candidates are not what we've ever seen before. These are two of the most polarizing personalities out there. When 54-58% respectively of the people say, I don't like these choices, they're looking for the opportunity for something else. So while I agree the system is 100% set up to limit voices and limit opinions at every level, I think there's also a true opportunity this time for people to call for it and to look for it. And I think that's the biggest difference this time, is people are seeking a third option as opposed to it just being there. There are regular folks that are looking for more choices. And I think, you know, I am a free market guy. So if I'm a free market guy, here's what I believe: supply and demand. If people are looking for that, someone's going to give it to them. And if you start seeing the MSNBCs or the CNNs of the world or the Fox Newses start providing more libertarian accents, and that does well, I think you're going to see it more.
But Drew Beeman, when it comes to that two-party chokehold, I'm all in favor of a lower threshold to get more candidates into debates. I think 15% is too high. I would lower that. I'd like to see a broader spectrum of debates in the fall. Not to say I thought we didn't think there was some overdoing it of debates in the last 6 months or so. I mean, you had CNN was asking the Republican candidates, what would your Secret Service code name be? We've just lost the plot if those are the actual questions. But the point being, a lot of people feel like this is set up to keep a Gary Johnson out of the debates because of the way things have always been here. Do you disagree?
No, I mean, it's always been that way. They've been working together to keep everybody else out. I mean, here's the thing. We have major universities saying that America is becoming an oligarchy if it's not already. And so to address two points, one that Mike said was I kind of feel like, you know, the two parties work together to polarize the population, divide and conquer, right? That's just an old ploy.
Absolutely.
You know, at the same time, we've got people like Noam Chomsky, who in the 80s exposed all that and exposed the media's role in that. If you read his book, Manufacturing Consent, nobody's been able to refute his points in those books. I think he's absolutely right, and I think he's onto something. So when we've got these, you know, for lack of a better term, corporate candidates who are running at behest of the corporations, and everything they do just divides the people, keeps them in their place, so to speak, in order to keep being consumers and run this machine that these oligarchs want to take over our country. And, you know, I hear this message from people on the left, Bernie Sanders camp. I hear this message from people on the far right. And I think this is why this election cycle is so different, is because the people have had enough. We, the people, have had enough. We're getting tired of this stuff. So then we go and we support maybe some crazy people like, you know, Trump. And Bernie Sanders is so popular, especially among the young people, because he's finally sticking it to the man. He's fighting the corporations. He sees that problem, that some of us also agree with him on that. And we, I think that's, you know, that's a big thing right now. And I think this is the time for the third parties to take a step up. And I'm really hoping that the Libertarian Party is the party that people can come to finally get what they're all looking for, which is real freedom.
Let's end the week with a mystery. We had the chance to talk to an astronomer leading a team of researchers who want to know what is going on with a very strange star.
Researchers discovered that a particular star in our galaxy has something enormous surrounding it, or at least orbiting it. It's way too big to be a planet. It's almost certainly not cosmic dust surrounding this star. It might be a series of comets, but it would have to be hundreds of comets or more, and they've never seen that before around a star. So that has led some to wonder if what is surrounding this star is a Dyson sphere. A Dyson sphere is an alien megastructure, and of course we have no evidence that they exist, but the idea goes like this. If there's an alien civilization that is highly advanced, it might want to colonize part of our galaxy, and to do that, it would need a lot of energy. Where to get the energy? Why build a massive panel or a series of panels to surround its host star? That's a Dyson sphere.
So maybe whatever is surrounding this strange star is actually a Dyson sphere. Probably not, says astronomer Tabitha Boyjean. But she told us, right now they can't rule anything out, even aliens.
You know, it did come up, you know, several years ago by, I think, you know, one of our citizen scientists who you know, were like, hey, you know, what about, you know, something like this? And, you know, it's just, it's something you kind of, you know, laugh about and you quickly dismiss. But then, you know, I did meet with my colleague, Jason Wright, and he was actually working on a paper that was studying this exact thing, whether or not Kepler could detect, you know, some sort of alien megastructure in Kepler data. And, you know, he went through several different scenarios of, you know, interesting objects that have been found, you know, and explained the, you know, pros and cons. But, you know, essentially each object that he discussed had a natural explanation to it. And that's, you know, when I showed him this data, he was like, oh, well, wait a minute. You know, if you don't have a natural explanation and, you know, it's been thoroughly scrubbed by, I don't know, several dozen, you know, astronomers, you know, this might be something that's, you know, worth pursuing in this respect.
And what did you think? Did you think this is loony or did you think, oh, interesting, interesting possibility?
The approach is definitely solid. You know, he was writing a paper that was published in the Astrophysical Journal, which is a very highly respected journal. But I myself was a little worried because I'm a junior astronomer and I kind of didn't want to get mixed up in anything that was a little eccentric like this because, I mean, it kind of makes you look like, you know, you're giving up on physics and, you know, just saying, oh, kind of, you know, getting way far out there.
In other words, it sounds like you are aware that your reputation is, in some ways, on the line here. I mean, your name is all over the news internationally, I think, fair to say, with this. But were you worried about sort of overly being associated with this alien idea?
I was, and it's already happened. My name was already on it. And I thought, you know, okay, well, if we test this idea, right, and if we look, if we do SETI observations on this star, if we look, then, you know, we can learn something and, you know, rule something out. And that itself has value to it.
Would you be surprised at this point if it's comets?
It would be an extremely interesting result.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I think at this point, I think any solution would be very surprising and very exciting. We have exhausted so many different scenarios.
By the way, Dr. Boyajian's paper calls this thing the WTF star, the where's the flux star. Very clever. That's high comedy. Do you like that?
It's good comedy. I like
that. science comedy. Very good.
Well, that's it for Weekend Connections. You can hear us every weekday afternoon on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR 88.5 FM, and Finger Lakes Public Radio, WEOS 89.5 FM.
You can always hear us also on the WXXI mobile app. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and we will talk with you on Monday.